I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Bizarro World. This is the 373rd episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk what we're investing in. We're going to talk summer exploration, to hike or not to hike, gold. Does it care? Does it not care? Is it decoupling? Jobs, inflation, Trump, Israel, ICE, Sophie Cunningham. There's a lot to get to. It's been a bizarro week. It's been a bizarro year. We'll get to it. But first and foremost, Mr. Hodge, how goes you in this bizarro land?
Enjoying summer, Gerardo, spending some time with the family. We'll do some more of that next week with my parents coming into town. Watching the world go by, the bizarre world, of course, and feeling a little bit better about the markets after what we got this week. We'll talk about it. Yeah. But yeah, generally slow for the summer, and at least on the news and volume and responsiveness front from the companies, but plenty going on here behind the scenes and with the drill bit, as we'll talk about as well. How are you?
Great, great. Thank you for asking. The wife's still beautiful. The wife still loves me. The kids are healthy. They still love me. They're doing great. It is indeed summertime here. My 2 mile morning jogs in the outside have gotten a tad bit warmer as we touched 105 yesterday.
Muy caliente.
Thankful for the pool. No. Things are well. Look, a lot of real quality exploration work going on that we'll get to here in a little bit. And some of it's starting to get rewarded in the market. So we'll touch on that later, but let's get to it. You and I had a conversation yesterday where I was looking at the 10-year and the 2-year and going, okay, it's at 4.62. Now it's back up to 4.7. But yesterday was at 4.62, 4.63. The markets had it light, and gold certainly had not liked that 10-year being above 4.5. Anytime the war escalates, we see a higher dollar and we see that 10-year treasury poke above 4.50. Every time that has happened on a sustained basis, we've had this president come out and say, we have a new deal, we have an MOU, we have a ceasefire. This week, before we get to the market response, was not a good week for U.S. soldiers. War isn't good for anyone involved. There's now public reports of over 100 people injured. U.S. soldiers, we're not counting Iran. We're not counting Lebanon. We're not counting, not Israel, because they don't have troops on the ground. That's only for us to do. But so we're not counting any civilians, none of that, just U.S. soldiers. Up to at least 4 dead out of those 100 plus, several with severe injuries. And meanwhile, our government is voting for the merging of Israel and our technology and our military. One more vote. It now goes to the Senate. It passed the House. While simultaneously, I'm going to get on a rant, I'm sorry. While simultaneously, Democrats are voting against a ban on owning and trading stocks while they are in Congress. 198 of them voted against that. So I say that to say that despite the quietness in the overall markets and the junior space with the summer being here and volume being a bit off, there's a whole little heck of a lot going on in the world. Condolences to the families of those that passed this week on all sides. And it doesn't look like it's de-escalating. If I look at oil, which Brent's now above the $100 mark. If I look at rates at 4.74 on the 10-year, it looks like the conflict is escalating. And despite that, gold has put in a heck of a week. We're down some $80 today because it really didn't like that 4.74% print on the 10. But good week for gold. Good week for silver. I asked you yesterday, is that correlation breaking down? Are they decoupling? And then today happened, and it's like, well, is that correlation back on, right? So I'm gonna leave it in your court. It's a bizarre world, and it's hard to make heads or tails of which way the market wants to go. I have an inclination, but I'd love to get your take, man.
I mean, it's been going back and forth as much as the ceasefire's been going back and forth, and that's why it's been so tough to put your finger on, whether that's yields that are driving Trump's decision or something else I was reading this week, him saying the war is off, the war is back on to stay within the threshold of time he needs to seek, congressional authorization to have a war that's not a war, right? You'll remember that both House and the Senate pretty much told him he needed to get approval. And yet the war continues and is widening now at this point. The ceasefire is firmly off. Just to recap what you said there, oil prices now going back up and yields are going back up with them. We were just last week talking about disinflation or inflation going down, and that still might be the case. For the month of July, just going back a couple of months, I think we had something like 4.2% monthly CPI in May, was down to 3.5 or thereabouts, 3.6 something, for June. And we'll likely be right about there for July as well, depending on how we finish up here the last week with oil prices. But with oil prices now going back up, it's going to take an inflation back up. And so as recently as last week, the 2-year was starting to cool a little bit while the 10-year remained elevated. And now they're both going back up almost as high as they've been for the entire year, or for the past, since 2025, excuse me. Yeah. 10-year is at 52-week highs. It's not as high as it was in January 2025, but it's getting there. It's higher than it was, you know, a month ago in May when it was at 4.7%. As you said, we touched just above 4.7. And so my conclusion in Foundational Profits last week and what we talked about was, in fact, the title of the podcast last week was the beatings will continue until the macro improves. And the macro is that dollar strength and the bond yields. So I think, well, it's tough. Like you look at the CME probabilities and which I'm doing right now, and they're not going to do anything next week when they meet. The Fed meets, I think, the 28th and 29th of July. And then they have a month off in August. So nothing's going to happen that month.
You try that at home, y'all.
And then when you look at the September number probability, it's 18%, no change, 56% quarter point hike, 25% half point hike. So the probabilities are that it's going to be higher, but that, as we've been talking about for months, goes up against what Warsh has been saying, what we know Trump wants. And so, and also, like, is the war going to cool off in the next month or 60 or 70 days? We don't know. There's a lot we don't know. You were saying that there's hundreds injured. You know, the New York Times was reporting dozens. We don't know the extent or severity of their injuries because
they won't tell us.
Yeah, and they don't really have to, I suppose. And they say it's strategic, right? Like if they tell us where those service members were hurt, it gives an advantage to the enemy, right? Because they know where the soft spots were in the armor, depending on where it was, you know, Jordan or Iraq or wherever, you know, those injuries are happening, where they're bombing, because they've now bombed. Iran has multiple countries where we have assets, right? So a lot of moving parts here. You know, I think ultimately the war needs to come to a quicker end. That's me wishing or projecting. You were saying last week, like, we don't have the wherewithal or the assets to keep it going. And yet Trump is requesting more money from Congress. So I guess what I would say is this. I'm not sure where rates are headed. I'm not convinced yet that we get that, you know, 56% chance of a hike in September. I just think that with the midterms, with Warsh being the lapdog and with Trump not wanting the hikes, that they're going to do as much as they can not to. Again, and I'm waffling here a little bit, I'm giving you some weasels and some hedging. You know, everybody gets a vote. There's multiple votes. It's not just Warsh's decision. I've said that on a couple of episodes as well. So the rates are the wild card. What I will say is this about the precious metals and the critical and base metals as well. The gold chart is starting to improve. The consolidation looks like it's done. Like, we were worried about that $3,900 level, that $4,000 level. That seems to have stuck like glue if you look at the chart. And it wants to improve from there. That tells me that, you know, $3,900, $4,000 is the new floor. We don't have to worry as much about that going down for whatever reason. I don't know if it's correlations breaking down. I don't know if it's just investors or gold investors getting tired of reacting, seesawing back and forth. Even in oil, it hasn't gone up as much as it did like when the bombs first started dropping, right? Because people, it's like crying wolf, right? It's like, oh, there's just going to be another ceasefire in a couple of weeks. And we being, you know, the collective or cumulative investors, got burned last time that happened and oil turned around and went back down. So all that to say, The consolidation in gold now looks healthy and not at risk of breaking down, which I was pretty concerned about over the past couple of weeks. And then on the copper side of things, looks even better. Like we've said for over a month now that it's copper, then gold, then silver. And copper is in fact bullish. I mean, whereas, you know, gold and silver are still technically short-term bearish while they consolidate, like copper looks real healthy, $6.30 or whatever it was last time I checked. Yeah. So that's good. I don't know if that's enough of an answer for you, but I also put there on the top of the sheet that we look at every week, yet another executive order this week by Trump. Correct. He's done going back to early last year. I mean, number 6-7 executive orders that relate to critical mineral supply chains and things like that. This one particularly having to do with the Department of Defense and starting to enact repercussions for them getting the critical minerals, and particularly, you know, some of those magnets and tantalums and galliums and germaniums from sources that aren't domestic. And, that tickles my contrarian sense as well, because some of those stocks, and including one I'll talk about in the paid portion of this podcast, are cheap because of the sell-off we've seen in the resource sector over the past couple of months. And it's almost ironic that you get these executive orders talking about you can't source these metals from anywhere else but domestically, but the very fact of the matter is you can't source them. We don't exactly right. So that tells me there's more capital and more support coming, either in terms of what we've already seen, like taking direct stakes in some of these companies, giving them land. We've seen some of those announcements to put facilities on army bases and other types of land, fast track permitting, which is ongoing, or some other mechanisms that we haven't seen yet. I think there's more of that to come. So that was a long winded answer and covered a lot of territory there. But all that to say that I don't know where the hell REITs are going.
Yeah, no, it's a great answer. And it's you know, I've said that mathematically we can't hike rates. I've also said, again, this is me hedging, that's exactly what we should be doing if we want to tackle inflation in a serious way, right? I don't underestimate our ability, and by our, I mean politicians and Fed chairs and Fed governors, our ability to do the wrong thing. And if history is a guide, they have always inflated their way, with Volcker being the exception in the 80s, have always inflated away the debt. That's the way that it's been historically. I think central banks, investors, and funds who are still very underweight gold, even at $4,000, are realizing this. You've seen trouble in the Japanese bond market with all sorts of interventions there. So again, if we look at this from a forest perspective and not just the United States tree, the whole world is in trouble, right? And we might be able to kick it down the curve a little bit longer just because we are the reserve currency, but that doesn't mean it doesn't come with short-term repercussions. And I think we're starting to see them. It's going to be a very interesting weekend politically because of what that 10-year and the 2-year are doing right now, and because of what energy prices are doing right now, and because of the fact that, look, I think we're like 40 or 39 days away from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve being completely tapped. Munitions, which has been, you know, I'm no geopolitical expert, but, you know, I know when a reload is happening. It's not, you know, it's common sense, right? It's clear that we've used the MOUs and as a stalling tactic to recoup and to reload. And I think, you know, the other side is onto that and is no longer willing to play ball in that manner. Hence the escalation of attacks on those bases that included Jordan and a few other ones. So no, it's going to be an interesting week politically over the weekend, and it has some consequences for the market.
They want a deal, Gerardo. They're begging for a deal. I talked to them. They're begging for a deal. They want a deal. My whole life has been deals, and they want a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot that we want. There's a lot what we want. I tell you what I don't want. Well, let me save that.
Before we move on is on the CPI. This is not directly related, but sort of tangentially related. You know, there's always and this isn't a conspiracy, you know, they could always sort of reframe the question, and it's sort of kicking the can. Like by rephrasing the question, I mean adjusting the way they look at that CPI, right? Or the target, like moving their 2% target would be one option, which we've heard tell of, in the past year. year or so. We're also calculating the way CPI comes out, and that's sort of an open conspiracy. I was reading something this week. I forget who it was that put it out. If I find it by the time we publish, I'll give attribution. But it was saying that, you know, there's been however many adjustments to the way CPI is calculated over the past years, and never once has it resulted in the CPI going up. It always results in the CPI Imagine being that. Calculated downward, right? So there's always that as well. And we know they don't count things like, you know, healthcare and some of the other stuff that's going up that we know are huge costs for families in general. And then I think people see that, just going back to the election coming up, people see that and they're getting angsty. Like, they're getting angsty with, you know, Trump's going back and forth. They're seeing him, you know, say that they want a deal. They're seeing that the ceasefire talk has been bullshit, and they see the prices going up. Like, I filled up my tank on the way into the office this morning, and diesel here is back up to almost $6, right? Where it was in the low fives just a couple of weeks ago. Like, that doesn't play well heading into an election. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. It's again, the bizarro-ness, it echoes loudly, right? And again, it's going to be an interesting week here politically over the weekend and over the next several days. Some might say, you know, a critical week if we don't de-escalate and both sides continue to escalate what seems to me like an absolutely pointless war that, again, we're fighting on behalf of another country's direction. So
And I get one of my local digs in, so, because, you know, we do both sides here. So, absolutely. Yeah, oil prices going up because of this war that was unnecessary and uncalled for. But here in Washington specifically, I just love when they play politics, because the governor was tweeting just that. Look at bad man, orange man Trump. He's making the prices go up for, you know, the prices at the pump are going up for families. And it's like, hey, dude, like, literally July 1st, Washington State implemented one in a series of gas tax increases. I think we're now at 51 or 53 cents a gallon, the second or third highest in the nation. And it will go up again next July and again the July after that. So don't you be out there pointing fingers or throwing stones when your house is made of glass, sir. If you would like to do something to help families in your own state, Mr. Ferguson, you could put a stay or a hold, or heaven forbid, reduce the gas tax that is causing that $6 a gallon diesel at the pump. So yeah. Anyway, both yep. sides get it.
No, absolutely. When we started with both sides, like I told you, the Democrats, 198 of them just voted against being able to trade stocks. And so that tells you, it tells you where the priorities are, right? It's just absolutely insane to me that these people are elected, that they stay there for decades. And then here we go. We're in the middle of a war. We're in a precarious economic position right now. And they're going to go away for a month, which I wouldn't mind if they went away permanently, right? Like, I wouldn't mind if we like figured a way out to just, again, have the aliens come down and get them up out of here. And let's replace them with some new bodies and minds. But for them to just take a month off in the midst of all this at a time where we're literally selling out the Constitution and looking to maybe likely permanently merge our military. And again, I don't care who it is. Like, I don't want it merged with anyone's military. I said this last week. It's just bonkers to me. But, you know, despite all that, prices at the pump being high, Taylor Farms being able to donate $1 million to the FDA, to the Trump administration, days after the FDA came out and said that, you know, this outbreak, this parasitic outbreak was traced back to Taylor Farms. Days after that, they donate $1 million to the Trump administration. FDA comes back out and says, oops, no, my bad. Nah, it was a false positive. It wasn't Taylor Farms. You had somebody else, right? It is the most blatant, corrupt group of politicians on both sides that I have seen in the 47 years of my life, and that I have read about historically, at the very least here in the United States. So
it's a new kind of devil's lettuce, Gerardo.
It's The new kind of devil's lettuce.
And just to tie it to the markets, those stocks are getting pretty decimated as well. Like Yum Brands, I'm looking at now, which owns, just to give you your little bit of market dose here instead of Bizarro World all the time. It was a $170 stock before people started shitting their pants, and that's a $147 stock now. And then I think Sweetgreen's, the salad company, was down like 25% in a day or a week the other day. Let me see if I can pull that up and then look at it for a second. Oh yeah, that was a $9.50 stock to start July. That's a $6 stock now. So that's literally been running, as it were,
Yeah, shit
downward.
show. A literal shit show. So look, back to the market. So we higher lows for gold, extremely bullish. Higher lows for silver. It was above 60 yesterday, sitting there at 5750. That's extremely bullish. Is the consolidation over? Is this new bottoming process over? Maybe not. It could last another several weeks. Again, I'm of the opinion that when it starts creeping back up, it's going to go back up in a violent manner. So buckle your seatbelts. It's going to be a fun second half of the year. And it's going to be a fun second half of the year, at least when it comes to the junior explorers, because the boys and the girls are working, Nick. They're out there and they're putting results. We'll get to the premium portion of the podcast here in a little bit, but several companies and large holdings, personal large holdings of mine, performing, adding value. We talked last week about the importance of adding value, whether or not there is a bull market or a bear market, a war, no war, a dovish Fed, a hawkish Fed. Doesn't matter. Your job as a CEO and as a director and as a board and as a company to shareholders is to find ways to add value. A lot of my larger personal holdings and portfolio positions continue to do that in a very aggressive fashion. Had a call with the CEO earlier this week. He actually called me and he said, I was watching Bizarro World, Gerardo, and I heard your rant and I felt like you were talking to me and I heard your rant about adding value. So I just want to let you know we're working hard and you know, keep expecting news. So and sure enough, that company delivered and delivered some good results. We'll talk about that later. But look, there's a lot of quality exploration work that's going on and some quality exploration work that was delayed, like in Quebec, right? You had fires that delayed some work here early in the summer. Lots of programs that either have just kicked off there or were slightly delayed and now are about to kick off here. So I expect assays, results, discoveries, a lot of news to light for the rest of the year. And again, if you give me a higher gold, silver, copper, lithium, uranium price, I'm happy to take it. I'm pretty confident that that's coming. The when part is the part where nobody knows. But even if none of those go up another dollar, these are bull markets. These are bull market prices, despite, you know, the consolidations that we've had here recently. Get positions, topped off, and take advantage of the summer doldrums and make sure that you have your list ready to go, because I think they're going to run. And look, it's really easy to miss the first 50% move higher, right? It's not fun being early, because you typically, if you're like me, you get in and like a month and a half later, a war starts and you weren't planning on the start of World War III. And now all of a sudden, all your positions that you just so eagerly entered into are down 50%. However, if you have the game plan, if you have the timeline, if you have the risk management in place to be able to let those positions perform and add value, it usually ends well, right? And I think we're going to get to that part here where things accelerate back to the upside. And I think, you know, the middle of August on could be a lot of fireworks in the junior resource space. We'll highlight some of those companies here in just a bit. Mr. Hodge, floor is yours. What would you like to get off your chest? I want to talk about Sophie Cunningham here in just a little bit. I know that's an issue that is near and dear to your heart because you have girls and you have girls that are active in the athletic circuit. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with Miss Sophie Cunningham. Sophie Cunningham. Hey, there you go. She's great. One, let me tell you, I'm absolutely biased. I love Sophie Cunningham and I'm a huge Caitlin Clark fan, right? So let me start by saying that. But on this issue, the girl's absolutely right. And it should be a middle of like, it should be like a center position. It shouldn't be like far left or far right. I don't understand the outrage, right? Just like I don't understand the outrage over the Odyssey, which I went and saw with my wife and my youngest son, who absolutely loved it. I loved it. That was the quickest 3-hour movie, other than Scorsese movies, because he's my favorite director, probably that I've ever been to. It was exceptionally well done. And so, but
You have
everybody
IMAX theater in Austin?
we do have an IMAX theater. I did not see it on IMAX, but my son and I love the movie so much that we're looking to get it before he moves. I'm down to Portland for college. Like, it was that good that we're wanting to watch the IMAX experience version of it. But yeah, with Sophie Cunningham, just to give you all like some context, she's a WNBA player on the Indiana Fever, double black belt, by the way, just all around badass. And, you know, she came out and said, look, love the trans community, love my trans people, nothing against the trans community. I don't want biologically born males playing in female athletic leagues. It's dangerous. It's dangerous to all the girls that have to be exposed to this. I don't know why that's controversial. I don't know what the outrage about that is. They asked her today about it, and she said, I thought I was just saying common sense stuff. Like, that seems like common sense to me. And I know you've talked at length about the issue before. I wanted to get your take. I didn't know if you saw her comments, but
I looked them up because I saw you put it on the sheet. And so, yeah, I mean, it's pretty common sense, although I still take issue with the assigning. When I looked it up, you know, what were her comments? It said that, or whatever media outlet I read said, Sophie Cunningham said that people who are assigned male at birth should not be, you know, play in women's or female sports. And I still take issue with the Orwellian language, man. Like, total media speak. What do you mean assigned at birth? Like, the whole thing doesn't make sense to me. And I think it's going away. You know, we talked about the Supreme Court case a couple of weeks ago that I think got it right. We'll see how states react to that. Again, another thing the left doesn't do right, could gain more credibility and more common ground and more independent voters and more people who are in the middle by, you know, not playing those lines. And I pointed out a couple of governors and attorneys general from states who were immediately going out, Democrats who were going out after that ruling and saying, you know, not in our state, we're going to let this continue. And it's like, dude, you're losing people who are like, have common sense, basically. Like, you're not doing yourselves any favors. And so, of course, you know, the algorithms and the social media is a program to enrage you as much as possible, and people provide the fodder. So I don't know if you saw, but like Megan Rapinoe, from the U.S. women's soccer, sure, was on The View this week, you know, taking the other side, because you got to have a professional athlete on the other side, right, to combat the Sophie Cunningham. You got to have the Megan Rapinoe. And she's saying it's an affront or an attack on all women to say that those assigned male at birth shouldn't play. It's like, what are you talking about? You know, I saw somebody say that, and I didn't know this, I had to look it up last night to see if it was true, and it is, that the U.S. women's soccer team lost to a 15-year-old and under boys soccer team. Like, the U.S. women's soccer team lost to a 15
and that was
under
a badass soccer team, let me say. That was a great team, y'all.
And it's like, if y'all are getting beat by 15-year-old boys, like, how is it fair in any sense? And how can you argue otherwise? Like, it's clearly not fair. It clearly doesn't make any sense. Tired of the language used around it. Wish we could move on, but apparently we can't. And I think some of that media coverage, again, back to the algorithms and the social medias, is one of those wedge issues, right, that drives the clicks, that drives the talk. Listen to us here talking about it now. But, you know, if you talk to the silent majority or most people who are in the middle, which I think is most people, even like Sophie Cunningham was saying, look, like, I think some stuff is good from conservatism. I think some stuff is good from liberalism or the Democrat side of things. Like, I'm just saying what I think is common sense. And I think a lot of people feel that way about this issue, especially because it's drug on for so long now. It's like, come on.
And affects so few people if you actually look at the numbers, right? Meanwhile, we forgot to mention that last week, Donald Trump paid out nearly $6 million to a sexual assault victim that he defamed and that he was found guilty of sexually assaulting. And so again, it's 2026, it's bizarro world. It didn't even make the cut last week that a sitting president paid nearly $6 million to a sexual assault victim that accused him of sexually assaulting her. And he was convicted of it in a courtroom, and so found liable and ordered to pay, refused to pay, appealed it. They said, no, motherfucker, you're gonna pay. It's the least you could do. So good for Miss Carroll for getting her money on, man. It's horrible she had to go through all of that just to get the money paid to her, let alone everything else that God knows happened, right?
And it only barely made the podcast last week. I hadn't even read it yet when you said it. I didn't really know what you were talking about. The speechwriter who had made over
90,000?
Yeah, six figures, as I saw some in some of the reports, from betting on like words Trump was going to say in his speeches because he had seen the speeches. And so that's, you know, a continuation of a couple of things. It's a continuation of a new form of insider trading, which I've been seeing a lot about in my, you know, morning Bloomberg and New York Times newsletters. Is, you know, it's not just the congressional stuff that you were talking about with the owning of stocks and the insider trading. It's like all these other agencies and government departments on the periphery, right? You had folks betting on the Nicolas Maduro getting ousted earlier this year. You had folks betting on, you know, and when bombs were going to drop in Iran or all sorts of other stuff. And it's in several cases, it's now been shown that there was a scant or select few that were on the right side of those trades because they, in fact, had inside information. Yeah, and that's not regulated. Well, not that the stock market's all that regulated when it comes to Congress and Senate anyway, but it's just like another sign or symbol or symptom of those who were in office, whether elected, appointed, or just, you know, employees, using their positions to benefit or graft or grift from the system, man, and par for the course for where we're at.
Yeah.
And I'll just keep going. Sorry,
were you going to say something else? Get it. No.
I think that's why you have folks in the Northern California living in trailers, abducting Forest Service employees at gunpoint. Did you see that story this week?
What the heck was that about?
I mean, I don't really know. That's why I wanted to talk about it. So it has echoes of, you know, Ruby Ridge or Cliven Bundy, if you remember that from a couple of years ago with the standoff over federal ground. But yeah, I just was, you know, reading the news the other day and they're scrolling or whatever. And I saw a couple of words that made me want to know more. It was like armed people in the remote Northern California forest, armed with AR-15s and grenades, held two Forest Service employees hostage. And so there wasn't a lot of information 2 days ago when it first happened, but they've since been arraigned or had their first court thing, and a little bit more is coming out. It was this guy and his son living in a trailer off grid in Northern California, which is, you know, same as Oregon and Idaho in many respects with the militias and those type of folks, just took these two Forest Service employees hostage. The employees were like doing research on some sort of frog, or I don't know if it was endangered or not, but they were doing a report on a frog. The dad, it was a father and son, the dad comes out with an AR-15, zip ties them. Puts one in the trailer that they're living in, puts the other one in the car that the Forest Service car that they had, drives to where he can get cell service and calls the fucking authorities and requests an FBI agent, like negotiator, says he's got a grenade at one point during the standoff.
What in the heck? And it'll be a good ass movie about this one.
Ultimately, they stood down. Like, the FBI was able to get the two Forest Service employees back. No shots fired, no injuries, no casualties. Good. And these guys are facing now, I think the Justice Department really said, up to life in prison and a $250,000 fine. But just definitely some off-grid guys. No motive given, obviously. So that's the missing piece here. Like, what were you doing to begin with? Like, what was your ask? Right. Like, I don't know. But anyway, again, par for the course. Folks living off-grid with ARs and grenades taking federal employees hostage.
2026 bingo has been a wild, wild one. Anything else you want to get off your chest before we get to the premium portion of the podcast here?
Oh yeah, we're running pretty hot this week, so I'll do the New York City lines. I don't know if you've seen this either, but it is the summer of lines in New York City. I'm talking about like standing in line, whether it's for bagels or pizza or Froyo has been the big one. You know, frozen yogurt's back, Gerardo.
Yes, sir.
Because of TikTok trends. So there's like influencers who are putting these spots in New York City establishments on TikTok and driving significant foot traffic. In some cases, people are waiting. The article that was in the magazine is called Curbed. It's behind a paywall, but I've been reading some excerpts of it. It says the lines are 2 to 3 people side by side for blocks and blocks to get like a cup of frozen yogurt, right? people are waiting 2 or 3 hours, and it spawned side business, obviously. Even going back to the Cronut and some trends a couple of years ago, there's a business that's evolved where it's called like Dude Stand in Line or something like that. And you can hire them to wait in line for you with a minimum of 2 hours. So it's $25 an hour, minimum of 2 hours. So $50 right off the bat for someone to hold your line, hold your spot in line to get whatever tchotchke or hot item you need to get so you can post your picture on social media, right? It's just bonkers to me in many respects. And I guess there's two sides of it. Like, one is, I've always said, like, I would never want to live in New York City. You ain't going to catch me dividing the escalator in two so half the escalator can run up, which I used to endure all the time when I went there for conferences in my younger days. Like, that's just not where it's at for me, to the heat in the subway, to the humidity, to all that sort of stuff, man. Like, I did that on many trips. I could never be there. Just the crowds, I don't really do. And I'm certainly not waiting in line for 2 or 3 hours to get myself a slice of pizza or a bagel. Like, that's not my bag. I'm also not following some trend blindly enough to do that. Like, that's not where I am either as a quasi-contrarian. But as the famous quote goes, I don't know who says it, something like, no one goes there anymore. It's always so crowded. So there is that aspect of it.
That's hilarious. I was not aware of the TikTok trends or what was going on. I will say this, the one exception to the waiting in line, I've done it and some experience, and it's fun. Franklin's Barbecue here.
I've done it with you.
You've done it with me. Yeah, it's probably the one exception right there. That's an experience. You meet people because people come from all over for this stuff, and you get there at 7-8 in the morning, pull up a lawn chair, you have a drink or two or three or four, you get to meet some cool people from all around the world. You wait in line from 7-8 in the morning till about 1 o'clock. At 1 o'clock, you're let in, and they'll serve that line until they run out, which they run out every single day. That is an experience that I actually need to do again soon. It's been a bit, and with it being 105 degrees out here, I don't know that now is the moment for it. But
that's not a trend. That's an institution, right?
That is, like, an institution.
People are going to be waiting in line there next year, the year after that, and have been for years. It's like next summer, no one's going to be waiting in line for Froyo. Like, it's going to come. It's going to come and go like cupcakes or whatever. You know what I mean?
Agreed. All right, let's get to the paid portion of the podcast, the premium portion of the podcast. I'm Gerardo Del Real, along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 373rd episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week, everyone. Get mad about the right things, get active in the right ways, and get outside, touch the ground a little bit. It's nice out for the most part, a little hot everywhere, but be okay. It's good to get outside. Take care, folks.
See ya.